The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
David Katz joins us now, Chief Investment Officer at Matrix Asset Advisors. So, David, you are put together some interesting numbers, some metrics to help our listeners understand, to put this recent stock market rally in perspective compared to other ones. Where do we start?
Okay, so you're hearing a lot that the market's at new highs, and that's spooking investors, especially because the last time you hit those highs was 2007, and we went into a fairly significant bear market. If you look at the S&P 500, in December of 1999, it sold at about 1470, and today you're pretty close to that. But the big difference, and this is critical, is in 1999, the S&P was earning $55 per share. Today, it's earning about $110 a share. So the earnings are up 100%. The PE has gone from 26 down to 13, and the dividend is actually up about 95%. So stocks are a lot cheaper today than they were in 1999, and they're a lot cheaper today than they were in 2007. So the S&P number is at the highs, but you're getting a lot more bang for your buck today than you did then. And because of that, we're feeling a lot more comfortable with the market here than we were back then.
David, in those comparisons, as I recall, 1999, we were getting pretty long in the tooth on a bull market that came to a collapse the next year. So are you making the comparison between really what was sort of an incredibly hot market and was way out of whack, and that really it's not much of a benchmark if you want to think of what should be a suitable, sustainable market?
Well, we do think the market was very richly priced then, but we're just sort of putting it in perspective because people see stocks at all-time high, and the last time they were there, the stock market sold off in 2000, and the last time it was there in 2007, they sold off. So they're taking the logical conclusion and say, well, it's going to sell off again. Generally, over the last 70-plus years, stocks sell at about 16 times earnings. Today, they're at about 13 times earnings. So we are starting from a point where we're lower than they normally sell. Generally, when you have a very low inflation and low interest rate environment, you sell at a higher PE than the average, or generally, so you'd be at 17 or 18 times earnings. So the fact that you have the 10-year Treasury at about 2% or 2.1% would mean that PE should actually be higher than the 16 rather than lower than the 16. But we absolutely agree, 1999 stocks were overpriced. We make the point that stocks are now underpriced because earnings have grown so much and stocks haven't done anything.
So we got the S&P 500 at 1561. Jim O'Neill from Goldman Sachs Asset Management had an interview with Bloomberg TV over in Singapore, and he wasn't talking about matching the previous high. He was talking about getting to above 1600. He said for that to happen, we'd have to see growth expectations go to something like 4% and beyond. And he says, I don't see persistent upside from those kinds of levels without more evidence the economy would be growing by what he calls ridiculously strong levels.
We don't think the economy is going to grow that strongly. We do think it's growing. We do think GDP numbers are coming up. But corporate America is doing well. And from 13.5 times earnings in a low interest rate environment, we think you're going to get some multiple expansion rather than just growth from the earnings growth.
So what kind of S&P 500 do you think we see this year?
Well, right,
we get to 1600?
We think that's very doable, especially because you've already had a lot of those gains. So right now the S&P is up about 10% this year, which would be under normal times a very good year. We think it ends nicely higher from here, and could it get into the mid-teens? Absolutely. The more important point is, the last 13 years you haven't made any money in stocks. We think that the next 1, 3, and 5 years stocks are going to be a pretty good place to be and a nice place to make money.
Well, I want to talk about the banks, particularly J.P. Morgan. But first, Mark and I were continuing to talk through the break a little bit about the P.E. ratios.
Yeah, this valuation question, which you mentioned, David, before the break, and you made this comparison to 1999 and showed how much lower the multiples are, that people are paying much less per profit, per dollar of earnings than they were, and that we're below the average. What do you think are the items going on in the economy or in the marketplace that are holding back these numbers so that we're at a depressed point, even with the market hitting record highs?
That's a great question. We'd say It's a number of factors. One, people are still getting over the 2008-2009 massive bear market and real estate collapse. So that's in the back of everybody's mind, number one. Two, you had a lot of problems come out of Europe that were very significant about a year ago. 2 years ago, there was a chance Europe was going to have this massive meltdown, which would have caused a second banking crisis. Now, Europe has taken those meltdown worries off the table, but they still are in a pretty deep recession. And while we think it's going to start to recover in 2014, that means 2013 is a recession. You also had China slowing down last year. That's getting a little bit better, but that's been an overhang. And then at the end of this year, 2012, you had the fiscal cliff concerns, and then more recently the sequestration return concern. So all of those put together to scare people a great deal. What we're seeing right now is a lot of the clouds, the storm clouds, are clearing up, and the sequestration doesn't seem to have derailed our economy. And if our government doesn't do something really stupid, we think the economy is set for a recovery, the global economy is set for a recovery, and then we think that the markets will continue to drift higher.
So, J.P. Morgan, a big hearing in Washington today. The people testifying from J.P. Morgan were chaste and apologetic and didn't know what happened, and we made mistakes. We have to regain confidence. But now there seems to be a lot of question about Jamie Dimon's role, and particularly when it comes to having the joint job of chairman and CEO. As someone who owns J.P. Morgan, do you see that that could possibly help the bank, especially if it's got to be a little bit tighter with its internal controls and its risk management?
When you invest hundreds of billions of dollars and make loans of hundreds of billions of dollars, there are going to be mistakes. The key is to be able to fight another day and to have the mistakes manageable enough that it doesn't impact your capital ratios or your earnings. And J.P. Morgan still earned a huge amount of money last year. So netting it out, there's going to be a lot of headline risk. It's easy to try to beat up on the J.P. Morgan executives. It's very easy to try to beat up on Jamie Dimon. We actually believe he probably is one of the best CEOs in America. He's definitely one of the best financial and banking CEOs. So we're comfortable with him as a CEO and chairman. If the roles were split, we'd be comfortable with that. We want him as the CEO. We want him operating this business, and we think it's in the J.P. Morgan shareholders and the whole banking industry's best interest to have him as a CEO of this company, because he really understands, and when you listen to him on the conference calls and speak with him at conferences, he's got about as good a grasp of everything that's going on as any banking CEO that we speak with.
Well, we had Douglas Braunstein, his vice chairman at J.P. Morgan, who was the CFO at the time, at the Senate hearing today, saying, we misunderstood the risks. We misunderstood the complication in it. We ultimately misunderstood what the estimated performance of it would be. So in hindsight, we got that wrong. Are you confident as a shareholder that the bank has addressed these issues so they know what they're doing and they're not putting your money at risk with investments they don't even understand?
Well, the industry has gotten more and more complicated, and what we saw in 2007, 2008, that every single bank and every single broker didn't understand the risks that they had with their money. In that case, they did not have enough diversification, and they were much too leveraged, and that's why you saw a lot of financials go out of business. In this case, they absolutely didn't understand the risk. They took on too much, and then when they realized that they had these problems, they didn't correct them immediately, and it got a little bit worse or a lot worse. But having said that, they still have this massive equity base, and they still were able to absorb the losses pretty seamlessly. We think that when you have a problem like this, they're going to put better systems in place. They're going to be less likely to make the same type or a similar type of stupid mistake in the next 3 to 5 years. We're sure that the banks are going to do something dumb like they did in real estate in 2007 and 8, but they're not going to do something dumb for about another 5 years. And then all of a sudden you have new executives. People are going to forget. They're going to leverage up. But we think for the near term, the banking group is being more prudent, and we think the J.P. Morgan is going to be pretty prudent, and we're very, very comfortable with their assets and with their earnings power.
So that sounds like a very clear-headed, pragmatic view of the situation, and certainly from an investment standpoint, I get it. But implicit in this is your view, I guess, that politicians can hold hearings, but when push comes to shove, they won't force the big banks the humongous banks to get just big. They won't do anything to limit the derivatives books, which the five big banks, including J.P. Morgan, dominate, despite many people saying that could help reduce risk. I mean, it just seems like, yeah, you're right from an investment standpoint. And in a way, it's kind of depressing because the big banks have gotten us in trouble before. And Lear just saying, yeah, they'll probably do it again.
It's pragmatic and it's realistic. In the 1970s and 1980s, you had the Latin America loans that hurt the money center banks. In the 1990s, you had the SNL crisis that hurt the banks. So it's out there. The banks are in a business of risk, and occasionally they're going to make mistakes or big mistakes. And it's good for it to be overseen and monitored by federal regulators. But you have to understand we're in a global economy right now. There are global financial institutions, and you can't act as if you can control the big U.S. banks and not expect to lose significant market share to the European banks if you do something like that.
Well, that's a big part of the question. You're going to have to come back soon, David. I think we got a whole lot more to talk about.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.